This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone!
Here with Eno Saris. It is Thursday, July 20th. We are about 2 weeks away from baseball's trade deadline, give or take. All the buzz on some guy named Shohei Ohtani. Perhaps you've heard of him. We are going to get a little bit into Ohtani, but we're also going to talk a little bit about teams who we feel like have a chance, even though the odds say they're against them. We're going to get into teams that we're confused by. And of course, we are going to talk about who should land Shohei Ohtani. Should Angels owner Artie Moreno decide, you know what, I'm going to just give away this generational talent because there's no way he's signing here because the Angels can't win. Or can they? They just swept the Yankees. I don't know. You know, they're a 500 team. One, how are you? Two, where do you stand in the trading Ohtani sweepstakes?
I'm good. I haven't had a great week. My phone has been broken, and that it's like having a broken arm or something. We're all just like so addicted to our phones. I'm like, what's going on out there? I can't get my every second update on the world. But it has. I'm reading a book.
Whoa. A real one or like a scratch and sniff?
You're right. Yeah, no, I'm reading a real book, so that's for another time. I'll wait till I finish it to give a review on it. But no, I'm fascinated by this Ohtani thing. I just had to record a little thing where I play acted as Andrew Friedman for Effectively Wild, Ben Lindbergh's show over at Fangraphs, and I gave an offer of a choice of Michael Bush and Gavin Stone, and then Ryan Pepio and another arm a little bit lower, but that was close to the big leagues. And so my impression that was that what Artie, not necessarily what Artie wants, but what Perry Minasian will want is something that will rejuvenate the pitching staff, I think mostly, but also just rejuvenate the team now, you know, like somebody like players that can step onto the field now, because he still has Mike Trout, you know, it's still a team that's sort of built to win now. And so he doesn't want, you know, your high A 17-year-old. Like, this is going to be a trade where he wants ideally someone who's had some major league experience, and can step in for him. I think he'll want a position player and then like two or three arms on top of that. So I think that's the structure of the deal that would make sense for the Angels. But I thought for our thought experiment, we might want to take the Dodgers out of it, because I think what the real risk here is for a team that's acquiring Ohtani is you don't have him for any longer than this season. So are you going to give away pieces that could be 6-year players for these other teams for 3 months of a guy? The Dodgers, I feel like, you know, the way I ended my voicemail, because it was a little fictional voicemail I was supposed to land, it was, we all know we're going to get him anyway in free agency. So that if you're the free if you're the Dodgers and you're probably the sort of favorite free agency, maybe the numbers work a little differently in your head. But I think for this other team, we should think about a non-Dodgers team that should be aggressive for Shohei Ohtani, knowing they might only get him for 3 months. So, you know, what do you think are like the sort of characteristics of a team like that? You know, that should be super aggressive, even if they only get him for 3 months.
I think a team that doesn't have a lot of money ready on the books, so that they maybe could take on that. You know, he is owed a decent amount. I know it's not
10 more million.
Yeah, Mega Millions. But, you know, that's a decent amount for teams who have already allocated payroll. And a team that can give up some top shelf prospects without totally gutting its farm system. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, teams that obviously want to win are going to acquire him, but I think you need more than just like two or three top prospects and then nothingness, you know, if you're going to create this tangible window. And that's why, you know, I'm going with the Baltimore Orioles, who, you know, are probably not going to do it, but, you know, it is a fun thought exercise to think about it. I was actually talking to somebody today and they said, you know, familiar with the Orioles line of thinking. And, you know, they kind of pointed out that the Orioles playbook here, after they got made an acquisition last night, getting Fujinami from Oakland, is to get another reliever. And instead of getting a starting pitcher, to shorten it up and have like a turbo bullpen, right? Have like the fifth and ninth innings taken care of. And that takes care of your, you know, your innings limit with these young guys. It takes care of the fact that your starting rotation is a bit of a weak spot. But let's pretend for a second they want to go after Ohtani. They have seven of the top 77 prospects in baseball. So even if they give up four of them, and maybe a guy on their big league roster, because let's not forget they have a crowded infield as well. Maybe they deal with Colton Cowser, who's currently on the big league team, right? I don't think they deal Gunnar Henderson. I don't think they deal catcher Adley Rutschman. And I think pitcher Grayson Rodriguez are another guys that like they must keep. But what if they say, you know what? You can have one of these other guys on our roster and you can have some of these prospects. And still at the end of the day, we'll have three, maybe four top 100 prospects. I think that's a move that you should make, because let's not forget, the Orioles were tragic for the last 5 years. This is the beginning of their window. But you know how windows go, right? Teams think they're going to be good for a while, and then injuries happen, and they never are. The Orioles, as we record, in a first-place tie with Tampa Bay, for the first time all season, Tampa Bay doesn't have full possession of first place. What would help invigorate a team more than getting basically the equivalent of an ace pitcher and Aaron Judge? That's what Shohei Ohtani is. You know, I know people have quibbled because he hasn't done that well at Camden Yards. That is an incredibly small sample size. One, two, everything we know about Shohei Ohtani is this guy is a competitor. Throw him in the middle of a pennant race. I mean, I saw this guy at the WBC, right? I mean, this guy lives for this. I think we would maybe even see another level. As crazy as that sounds, I think maybe you would even see better play than you're seeing now, because all of a sudden these games really matter. This guy wants to win. There's one thing we don't need translated, right? And that is that losing absolutely disgusts him. So send him to a place where he can win right away. Bring him on a Baltimore Orioles team who isn't necessarily, I don't think, mortgaging the future, but making a real go at it here and setting themselves up that maybe the window isn't the 5 years they thought. Maybe it's three now because of this. You know what? Flags fly forever. They win the World Series this year, you know, or even get to the World Series this year. No one is going to say, oh, you shouldn't have gotten rid of that prospect who eventually made it to the big leagues for a couple of years. No.
Yeah, I think, you know, they could afford, you know, Joey Ortiz or Colton Cowser as the centerpiece. That would be a person. Joey Ortiz could step in the middle infield for them right away. Colton Cowser in the outfield. They're ready to go. They're valuable prospects at that level. Then they also have, I think, some of the pitching depth that's nearby that they could pick from to put it together. I saw some really good stuff. Plus numbers for Justin Armbruster is a triple-A guy for them.
Yeah, he's interesting. I'm so glad you brought him up. People compare him to John Means, and that like he didn't get a whole lot of like publicity and stuff, and then just all of a sudden was on the map. But there's been some buzz about him lately. So it's interesting. Yeah, You're the first person I've heard talk about him.
Yeah, a buzzy AAA.
Yeah.
Buzzy AAA arm, an everyday position player, and then you throw in another arm that's nearby. Drew Rahm is a guy that's come up. So you start packaging those together. That's a package that, frankly, could beat the Dodgers package I was throwing out there if you like the arms better. If you like, you know, Michael Bush has some swing and miss. Maybe you like Joey Ortiz's contact rates better. So it's definitely up there with the Dodgers one. And I don't think it kills the Orioles long term. And the last part that I think that why the Orioles is such a great choice is just that I think this has to be a team that is like 80, 90% chance of making the playoffs. You know, he's not going to go to a team that has like a 20% chance of playoffs. Like, I don't think that like the Guardians, like, do you think the Guardians, like, do you think he'll be super excited about going to the Guardians?
No, but I don't think you can ever count out AJ Preller on anything, and they're pretty low.
I the vibes I get is more like, you know, if you guys get it together, then fine. But I'm not gonna, and they have very little to add. Also, the pieces that the Padres do have are further away. So I mean, I guess you could get Artie Moreno and Perry Minasian excited about Ethan Salas, of course, as a catcher, or Jackson Merrill, their shortstop, but those guys are pretty far away, I think. And you know, you got Mike Trout now. So I think the Orioles really have the package that puts it together. You know, in fact, I think the Rays are similar in that regard.
Yep.
And, you know, you mentioned the money, Right now, the estimated payroll over at Fangraphs for the Rays is $78 million. They finished last year at $86 million. Now, you know, it's $10 million for Otani, but you could improve the prospects that you're putting on the table in order to get better return.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Is there someone that the Rays are king of buying and selling, right? Is there someone that they could take off their roster and flip elsewhere that they feel like isn't worth the money to clear some
Or they ask the Angels to pay some of that money.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, you pay $5 million, you get a better prospect. And in the language of the prospect, well, you got the 20 to 80 scouting scale. And I was looking at the value of different prospects and the surplus value that Otani, you know, represents and like what would be a fair trade. And you have to think about the fact that people are prospect hugging hardcore. You know, with, you know, for example, Curtis Meade is a 55 future value prospect for Tampa Bay. 55 is pretty good. It's not the top sort of 20 prospects, 25 prospects. Those guys are 60, 20 to 80, remember. So 55 is better than average, but not, you know, one of these prime top end prospects that probably won't get traded. So Curtis Meade might be, according to some lists, one of the better names that we've mentioned here. He's a 55. Joey Ortiz is a 50, you know, Michael Bush is a 50. So what you could say is, hey, pay down $5 million of what Otani's owed the rest of the season, and we'll give you Curtis Meade, who might be the best prospect that you see in these deals. And then we'll throw in, you know, Mason Montgomery is a double A arm. That's pretty exciting. It's the Rays. They have a group of arms. Maybe they give them Cooper Criswell, whatever it is. They've got arms to trade, and then they get an ace, you know, and, you know, with Glasnow, that's co-aces. Plus he helps their hitting. Plus this is like, you know, this feels like a real kind of go for it year for the Rays. You know, they're so far out in front, 97% to make the playoffs. Other than the Braves, there's nobody higher. You know, in terms of like run differential, they're second. They've stepped back a little bit, right? Like they were out in front, they were the front runners, and they still have 60 wins. But you know, the Braves kind of showed them who's boss a little bit in that series and have come out in front of that. So I think the Rays, you know, kind of, you know, be like, hey, let's stop going to the playoffs. Let's win the World Series.
Yeah. And here's the interesting thing though. And if the Angels keep winning and their next two series are against the Pirates and the Tigers, this all may be moot. I know it's great podcast fare, but like if Mike Trout is coming back and the Angels, who are now 500, keep winning, do you trade him if you're Artie Moreno? If you know you have no chance of getting him back, but you're pocketing sponsorship money, you're getting all that Japanese television money that you know is probably significant just to watch Otani, right? So is it worth it for the Angels to trade him?
Yeah, does anybody buy an Angels Otani jersey the minute he's traded? So, you know, how much jersey sales are you losing? Does that
TV
money
sponsorships for Japanese companies?
Does that money, well, some of the sponsorships feels like something you pay for at the beginning of the year, or you pay for a year, you know. It's like, yeah. So I don't know if that goes away. Mm-hmm. And doesn't jersey money go to like the central fund and get redistributed?
I don't know, but what about the RSN money?
Yeah. I think that's like negotiated on a yearly level too. So I think that the main risk is people stop coming to the park.
Yeah. Wait a second. I thought when more people watch the games, the RSNs generate more money.
I think on a year to year level, I mean, basically when you negotiate with the RSN, you have like a 5-year deal or a 3-year deal or whatever. So I think they're locked in at least to the end of the year on whatever deal they've got. So I think the main risk is people don't come to the park, but that's still money. That's still, you know, you're still making money at the ballpark. And so then you also have to think that if you put the qualifying offer tag on him and he goes, you get a pick that's actually worth, you know, 5 to 10 million, depending on where you slot in. So, you know, there's some money that he's leaving out there right now. The playoff odds for the Angels are at 14%. That's not terrible. You know, that's around where the Mariners are, You know, it's behind the Red Sox, but people are very excited about the Reds, and they're about the same as the Reds.
Yeah.
The Reds,
well, they went on a losing streak too, right? The Reds, they got so hot, and then very quietly they lost, what is it, 6 in a row?
But that tells you a little bit about how much your playoff odds can change, right? Like the Reds, the Reds were more of a single digit team, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, and now they're an 18% chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, if the Angels have a good run, they can get back in it. But I think in the end, I would trade him, you know, if you're going to ask me for a question, for a real answer and not the waffling, just because, you know, I don't think they're winning that division. The Astros are 53-43, and the Rangers are 58-39. And if you just look at what it'll take to take the wild card in the American League, it's going to take beating two American League East teams. The worst American League team, East team, has 51 wins. So you're 2 wins out of the Red Sox. You know, you're 3 wins, 4 wins, 5 wins out of those other guys. You're betting, you have to, it's like not only how many games out you are, it's like how many teams are between you and the wild card, you know, how many other teams you need to start to fall apart. So you kind of need most of the AL East to fall apart. And I think that's not necessarily happening. So I think I would trade him. You know, this kind of goes as a segue, I guess, into our next, you know, segment, which is, you know, which of these teams you like? Do you, you know, among these teams that are sort of 30% and lower on Fangraphs, would you pick other teams in that range that I think I would rather get excited about? So some of the teams that have less than or 30% or less chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs, are the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Guardians, the Mariners, the Angels, the Mets, the Reds, and the Padres.
Yeah.
So who do you like in that group?
It's got to be the Yankees. I mean, I know the sky is falling right now because, like I said, they just got swept by the Angels. Aaron Boone said, yeah, we know we stink. Their offense has been atrocious. There's no way around that. Also, Rodon has been a big disappointment. I mean, last night he has a terrible start. Clearly fans get into him. He blows a kiss to fans in the stands. Did you see this highlight?
No, I did not.
I mean, that's going to go over real well in New York. Not good.
But he's an irascible fellow.
Yeah, they are getting back Aaron Judge at some point. And that is, like I said.
But it may not be 100% Judge, right? Like
no,
they said that
no.
It sounds like something that would normally take surgery, but he's just going to play through the pain a little bit.
Yeah. So if anything, and we've talked about this on this show before, it exposes how incredibly one-dimensional the Yankees offense is because, you know, you take out Aaron Judge, who obviously is a huge player. He broke the American League record for home runs just a year ago, signed a, you know, a mega deal to stay in New York. But on one hand, you know, he's a great player. On the other hand, they have nobody else in that lineup. And that's really become apparent with his prolonged absence. But I do think getting him back is important. And I do think that the Yankees are going to be a team that, you know, they're not just going to say, oh, let's just sell off for spare parts. Like, they're built to win. Their fan base is going nuts. They haven't won since 2009, which is an absolute lifetime for New York Yankee fans who grew up in, you know, the 90s, the early 2000s. So I do think the Yankees still have a good chance here. As you mentioned, the Red Sox in there too. It's crazy that the American League East, and we've talked about this all year, that whole division is a division full of playoff teams. So I don't think we should panic when it comes to the Yankees. I think they're going to make some moves. I do think they're feeling the heat because for the first time in Brian Cashman's tenure as GM, what, 17, 18 years, he fires a coach in season. They do have Sean Casey now heading up their hitting coach. I don't know how much of an impact that's going to have, especially immediately. I think people think coaches do more than they do, but I still have reason to believe the Yankees, there are pockets of the schedule where they're going to be okay. And Aaron Judge at some point is going to come back. And even an 80% Aaron Judge, and I, you know, you've heard Manny Machado and other players talk about this before, you know, playing at 70, 80% when you're that big of a star is still a significant boost to a team. So even if Aaron Judge is only 80%, adding him back to that lineup is still going to help the Yankees moving forward. So I have not given up on them totally. I think that they're going to be fine.
Well, I wonder what kind of a trade you'd gift them. I mean, I think Stanton is, you know, right now you can see that he's hitting the ball really strong, and he's in fact reduced his strikeout rate recently. So I could see Stanton going on a tear. You know, he's healthy. You got, I think Volpe has really turned heads with his play recently, really cut down on the strikeout rate. Looks like an everyday player now. So you've got decent players at short, at second. You got a star in right. Bader, I think, is a two-way guy and a really valuable piece in center. You know, maybe LeMahieu's probably an upgrade over Donaldson, whose career might be over now. You really just need Rizzo to get going, and he hasn't really shown it yet. I think he's on a 30-plus day home run drought. So, you know, Rizzo getting going would do a lot for this team. But I think that an obvious trade opportunity would come maybe in a corner outfield position. I mean, right now the depth chart says IKF, Bowers, Calhoun, McKinney, and left. And I think those are part-time guys that are okay. But, you know, if you put an impact player there, even in a rental situation, I think that might be something they could do. Or do you think it's more, you know, a pitcher they need? Or where would you gift them a player if you could?
Well, in order to get them to the playoffs? Yeah, I like the addition of an outfielder, because listen, you can't just add Aaron Judge and say, all right, we're good now. What if he re-injures his toe? What if, like, right, you said, he's 80%, but still, like, the power isn't there for some reason? They honestly need a lot of improvements, because Rodon hasn't been that great since he came back, and he was their big, like, starting pitching addition. So I would kind of look for that as well. I mean, everyone upgrades their bullpen this time of year, so you always got to listen in and kind of see what could make it better. But to me, adding another bat that's not named Aaron Judge would help the Yankees immensely.
Yeah, I have some hope for Rodon. You know, not all the movement is 100% back for him, but the velo was. And so, you know, what was really missing for him was the command. And he's never been a command artist, but I don't know that he's going to be this bad. So I think that to some extent, getting people right is going to be what does this for them. But, you know, one thing that does not impress me about this Yankees team that I was kind of surprised about when I looked in the numbers is they have only scored 8 more runs than their opponents all year. And I always had this impression of them as, you know, being in a tough division, but actually being a really quality team. At 50-47 with an 8, you know, with an 8 run differential, you might expect them to actually be .500.
Yes, but run differentials don't tell the whole story, because look at the Padres' run differential. However, they've been involved in many blowout wins. You know, I remember I covered the Orioles in 2012, and they had a negative run differential, and people seem to think, well, they couldn't possibly go to the playoffs like that. Well, yes, they went to the playoffs. They won the wild card. They ended up losing the DS to the Yankees. So sometimes the run differential can actually be something that is just an anomaly and doesn't actually have a whole lot of bearing on whether the team is good or not. Because let's see where San Diego, where their run differential is.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, the Padres,
and they're 46-50.
It stands out a little bit because they've scored 46 more runs than their opponents.
Yep.
Basically the same as the Orioles. The Orioles are 58-37 and the Padres are 46-50. So
you look at it right as, oh, it could be bad luck. Well, it's not. They're just involved in a lot of blowout wins.
But the Padres are also 5-15 in one run games. And that, I think, is a bit of bad luck. So it's a little bit of both. And you're right that run scoring is not always evenly distributed. So there's some times when it's, you know, it's 15-0. And that doesn't mean much about your team other than they just won a laugher, you know. But I was looking at projected rest of season run differential, which I think is a little bit better test of true talent. Padres are second. They're projected to go 37-29 the rest of the way, and which score almost five runs a game and allow 4.3. It seems maybe silly, but what I'm seeing right now when I look at the Padres, and I'm gonna pick them as my team, is Manny Machado is right again.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had the ankle injury last year that was, that was a tear. Other people could have opted for surgery. He I don't know if he went on the IL. And this year he had the hamate thing, and other people, really deal with that for a long time. And, you know, he took the minimum and came back. He obviously wasn't 100%. Like you said, the 80% Manny Machado wasn't exactly great, but he was there. He helped them win some games, and now he's on a tear. And I think he looks really excellent. I love his swing, by the way. You know, people talk about lefty swings and they love lefty swings. To me, Manny Machado's swing is one of the sweetest swings in baseball, just because it just seems so effortless.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you've noticed before, but
I mean, listen, it seems like as that team goes, as how Manny goes, right? He put them on his back last year without Tatis and really kind of cemented himself as
the guy. But he has more help now.
But they didn't play well when you, like, it seems like when he's playing well, the Padres win.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know what it is. And, like, there are oftentimes, especially when, you know, they weren't winning, but Tatis was still playing well. Like, you can't say that about every guy on that team. I don't know what that is, other than maybe randomness. I don't know. But you're right. I mean, he's been terrific. He's been on a tear for really the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, the Padres are still in that limbo. They're sort of in the Mets boat of, like, 1 week, this team can do it. They can reel it off. And then the next week you think it's too late for this team, right? Can every team be the 2021 Braves and the 2019 Nationals? No, historically, historically, no. And there's like five.
That's why we have these playoff percentages at all, because most teams do that.
Right. And there's like five teams that are banking on that happening. Now, what is interesting, and as we know and have said before, and probably why you also like the Padres, is you know that AJ Preller is going to be aggressive. They're not going to just fold the house of cards, right? Which is, I'm sure, another factor in picking them down the stretch. Is they're, if they do anything, they're going to probably be tiny buyers, right?
Yeah.
Certainly
yeah,
not going to sell.
I think the idea of selling Hader and Snell now is out the window. You know, I just, they played well enough coming out of the thing, and it is sort of series to series with them on what will happen. But you know, I think a couple of things that were interesting just happened in San Diego. Robert Suarez came back.
Huge.
And you know, I think that's pretty huge. Yeah, I mean, huge, he throws really, really hard, and Nick Martinez and Steven Wilson do not throw really hard. Tom Cosgrove does not throw really hard. So this gives them a really hard throwing guy to pair with Hader, and you push everybody back in that bullpen a little bit, because I think eventually he will be the setup guy. So now you've got two guys, righty lefty, at the back end of the bullpen who throw super hard, and I like that. Also, they made some aggressive moves in, you know, and letting Austin Nola go and giving Luis Camposano more playing time. So they prioritize offense at the catching position. And then lastly, one thing I do like about this team is that I think their lineup is very diverse in terms of approach. Now, you got Manny Machado, who's kind of hit tool plus power, not the most patient guy in the world. But then you have Soto, who is, like, literally the most patient guy in the world.
Yeah.
You know, Grisham's a really patient guy, too. And then you have Tatis, who's a free swinger. And then you have Xander Bogaerts, who's kind of in between, makes a lot of contact, great hit tool, you know, will take a walk. I think this is a really nice, diverse lineup that can, you know, righty, lefty, can do a lot of things for you. Maybe a lefty DH, because Matt Carpenter, you know, hasn't been what they expected. Maybe some sort of lefty DH could be something that I would gift them. And that might not cost that much, honestly. You're just looking for a lefty hitter, and you don't care about the position. So,
yeah.
Well, the Padres are a team that I could see putting it together.
I kind of like your idea, especially because, as you said, if they're going to go series by series, right now they're trailing by a run in Toronto. But after this, they play at Detroit, and then they play three at home against the Pirates. That's an easy six-game stretch. You should win four of those games.
Yeah.
And if we're really going to play, like, if they sniff 500 by the deadline, I think they're going to say, yeah, we're good here, right? We think we can keep going. I think all these teams, the Mets also, just waiting to get to that 500 mark to say, like, all right, we could turn it around, right? And I think the Padres are kind of in that situation, and the schedule is pretty good. And then, of course, they go to Texas comes, and that's going to be tough. They've got a makeup game against Colorado. They play Cincinnati, the Angels after that. I'm looking at the wrong month. They didn't play any of those games. I'm looking at the wrong month. Hold on. Let me give you the real schedule. was looking at June into July.
They actually, according to Fangraphs, have the easiest rest of season schedule among the NL West.
They do. Oh, wait, no, that is correct. The MLB thing was weird. Nah, they do play. They do play Detroit and Pittsburgh. Sorry, everyone. Then Texas, Colorado, and the Dodgers. So certainly some pretty winnable. I mean, Texas is good, but three of those teams are sellers, clear sellers.
Yeah,
if we're not going to be 500 by then, you know what I mean?
And another thing I like about the Padres is the NL East is not as good top to bottom as the AL East. So it's not as much of, there's not as many teams you have to beat out from the NL East to make the playoffs. Like, could they beat out the Marlins? Yeah, I think they could. Then could they beat out the Diamondbacks? Yeah, I think they could. So, you know, could they be the second? Could there be two wild cards coming out of the West? Will the Giants regress? Will the Diamondbacks? The Diamondbacks bullpen is pretty horrible. Yeah. So, you know, and they've seen a bunch of losses in a row, and a lot of it had to do with the bullpen. So, I would gift the Padres Charlie Blackmon as a lefty singles hitting DH that can play the outfield. He kills the Padres, so you take him off that team and you put him on the Padres so that he can't kill the Padres. But also just, I think, lengthens that lineup. And, if you need the home run, you bring Matt Carpenter off the bench and let him go for the home run. But maybe start the game with Blackmon so that he can keep that lineup moving. That's definitely a team I like. Teams that confuse me in here, you know, are teams like the Reds and the Angels. Do you have a team that sort of, we both pick kind of chalk, right? we said, you know, of the teams that have a 30% chance of making the playoffs or not, we took the guys that had 30% chances in the Yankees and Padres. But what about the teams beyond them? What do you think about those?
So I was just going to ask you about this because it seems like it's an interesting time right now, because if you just look at trends, like, are you, I guess, like, worried all the Braves have lost four? I'm not worried about the Braves. Are you worried the Miami lost six in a row? Maybe. Right. And then we come down to one of those teams that you talked about in the Reds, who are 3-7 over their last 10. And for me, Cincinnati has to make a move. They have to add a starting pitcher if they're going to stay in this thing. I think they had that great hot streak that put them, you know, right behind Milwaukee is where they sit right now in a very weak NL Central. I think no one is fooled by the Cardinals winning five in a row, right? That's a team we've talked about before, should still sell. I know John Mozeliak said the other day that they're going to approach this trade deadline with an eye on the next one. But to me, the Reds are interesting. If they make the right moves here, like, what if the Reds got Ohtani? Then all of a sudden we're saying, like, let's go. But there's not a whole lot.
It would be such a risky situation for them, I think. They're not going to make the wild card. So there's no like, we're going for the division. If we don't get the division, we get the wild card. I don't think that's in their future.
No, but their farm is thin too. It's good, but I think they're not as deep as like an Orioles system.
I think that's a good point. But what they do have is a lot of position players. So what I would love for the Reds is, you know, sometimes teams make acquisitions at the trade deadline that are not just for the rest of the season.
Right.
So if they could make a trade with someone where they give up, it could be a young major league position player. They have so many pieces right now that somebody like Spencer Steer is sitting sometimes, you know. So I don't know. I'm not going to name one because it make people really mad because it couldn't be him. But like maybe somebody on that major league team, or maybe even a Nuelvi Marte who's in AAA right now. You give him up and you get a pitcher back that you have for next year too.
Yes.
And so I think that's the kind of buying the Reds should do, is augment that pitching staff. Give someone that can pair with Hunter Green next year at the top of that rotation. That would be amazing for them.
But yeah, I'm not out on them. I think they have a chance to make the playoffs still, even though they're, you know, mathematically one of the lower teams that we talked about, because their division is so weak. We're just seeing the beginning of Ellie De La Cruz, right? And we've seen it before with them that they're capable. I think what people maybe don't realize is when a team goes on a run like that, especially a team that's got a lot of young players like the Reds, it mentally kind of changes things for them. It's like, we could win eight in a row because we've won eight in a row. right? Mm-hmm. Teams like the Mets and Padres are still waiting for that long winning streak, right? Once you have one, it just gives you so much more of that innate confidence that, like, this team just did that. We just had a hot week. Why can't we have another hot week, right? So there is something, I think, to be said for what those hot streaks do. Not only do they put you in a position where, you know, Kyle Gibson in Baltimore was talking about this the other day, because the Orioles haven't been swept in 70 series, which is remarkable.
Wow.
He was saying, yeah, not since Adley Rutschman came up. But he was saying you have a win streak like that, and it puts you in a position that if you lose the next series, you're not panicked because you've built that padding, right? And so the Reds have built this padding where, even though they had a down stretch over the last 10, as I mentioned, they know they still have that somewhere in them. These young guys know that they can rattle off if they need 5, 6, 7, 8 wins. And so that's why I think the Reds are, to me, still a dangerous, like, lurker, in that they could get into the postseason and be a really difficult team, especially if they added to their rotation, like we were talking about.
The vibes are super strong in Cincinnati, I will have to say. You've got the elder statesman, Joey Votto, who's like, you know, he's playing to get one more contract, but he's also playing to finally win with a group of players, because it's been a long time since he's won. And you can see how much fun he's having. I mean, he hit a homer the other day and did this jump arm bash thing where he literally jumped as high as he could. And maybe I think it was because it was this Ellie, and Ellie's really tall, but, you know, he was jazzed. And in those games against the Giants where, you know, it was coming down to the last at-bats for a lot of those games, and he kept coming up, you know, in big moments. He struck out to end one game, which wasn't his best, but then he, in another one, I think he walked to continue the rally. So, you know, he's in this, and then the rest of them are all young guys who a lot of them have been playing together for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And that gives them a sort of familiarity and a, like, this is our time. Like, this is, we all came up together and we all know how good each other is and we all have each other's backs. And it reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, when the Royals won the World Series, they were a bunch of kids that, you know, had come to up together in the system together. So, you know, I think that is something to think about. I, for me, confusing, when I hear the word confusing, which potential contenders are confusing, to me, it's the Mariners that kind of comes to mind, because I'm like literally confused. You know, I think with you, you sort of took it with like, yeah, the numbers aren't great, but I'm still excited about them. I don't know what it takes to build a contender in Seattle for some reason. Like, I don't know why it's so hard, because when I look at the Mariners, I say, this is a pretty good team, you know, and you've got a superstar in center field. You have, you have players that make it work around them. You have some young players that have some upside. You have some veterans that are good. Cal Raleigh is just like a really good catcher behind the plate in both defensive and offensive capabilities. I'm just about to put my pitching ranks out tomorrow, and I've got Luis Castillo and George Kirby both in the top 20. Yeah. And behind them, Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller, in the top 30, 40. So you've got like a bunch of great starting pitchers. Your system has been turning out young guys. The bullpen is top notch. Like, I guess it's the lineup, but I think the park is also just really tough to hit in. And they got some bad news today, sort of breaking news, I guess. But Jared Kelenic has a foot fracture,
which is a real gut punch.
It's a tough one. Yeah, because they're not, it's the lineup, they've been struggling to put together a really good lineup. It wasn't quite a really good lineup, but it was when Jared was hitting, it was better. And without him, it's kind of Julio and Teoscar and sometimes Ty France, sometimes Eugenio Suarez, but not every time. So it's kind of like two guys you can count on and some other guys that sometimes come through. That doesn't sound to me like a lineup that's going to make the playoffs. But again, you've sort of built to this moment in some ways. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do. I think Teoscar Hernandez could be an interesting trade piece if they sell. I do believe he's near the end of his contract. That was they were trying to get a bit of a 1 year help in him. So if they do sell, Teoscar Hernandez is probably the biggest piece, because they'd want to be good again next year. I don't know what they would add, because I don't know that a rental Teoscar Hernandez brings that much back. So
Yeah, I'm so confused on which way Seattle is going to go, because you're right. Their hitting has just been erratic. And part of that has also been Julio Rodriguez, who really has been erratic this season. Really disappointing for a good chunk of the year, honestly. And, you know, you look at that team and the pitching has been so good. And you're right. They have the prospects to make a deal. They've got four guys in the top 100, Harry Ford, Cole Young, Brian Wu, Gabriel Gonzalez. So they have the farm system, but then you wonder, like, should they, right? Especially with the Kelnick news, especially because they really underperformed the first half. Now they're right around 500, but like some of these other divisions, like the Yankees, like they are playing in a division where, you know, the Angels, as we talked about, are threatening. They're right at 500. You know, we know how good Texas is.
The Rangers have just really leapt out to the front.
Yeah, Houston, like having a little bit of a down year by their standards, but it's a tough division in the West. Really, it is. And so I don't know if you're Seattle, if you're like, yeah, let's push all our chips in, even though they're coming off such a great story last year and that they finally beat the playoff drought. And I think everybody was looking forward to like watching this window start. And this should be a cautionary tale, in my opinion, to teams who feel like, oh, our window is just beginning. Because didn't it feel that way in Seattle last year? That
this right. was the start and now of better I'm sort times? Of confused. I'm like,
yes.
Like, I'm confused about like, where should I point for next year? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this guy's going to come up next year, and or they could trade for this. They're not going to trade for, you know, Teoscar Hernandez for an impact bat that's going to be up in the big leagues next year. Like that's just not how his trade value is. So, you know, Harry Ford is exciting. He's a catcher. He's 20 years old. He's at high A.
Yeah.
Maybe if he hits the high end of expectations, he could debut for them late next year. That could be something to get excited about, but they don't have, and then there's a lot of starting pitchers. Then they have like a 17-year-old, you know, who's very far away. Is their next Jonathan Clase is a speedy prospect that might have power. He strikes out a lot and plays center field. So, you know, but he himself is only 21 years old. So I don't know that the impact prospect, you know, capital is there for their lineup. So, you know, but you know what Jerry DePoto is going to do. He's going to buy and sell at the same time. And I could see him, you know, maybe matching up almost with Cincinnati in a reverse situation where he gives them some sort of, get Nuelve Marte back.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but they need, I think, a little bit more young hitters that are close to the big leagues. And that's really hard to get in the trade market.
Yeah. That to me, they're the most confusing team for that reason. And again, I think a little bit of a cautionary tale of how quickly things can kind of unravel, right? When you look at them and you look at where they're at, and you know, you're right, they probably will try to buy and sell. Didn't they already sell to some extent to clear a little room? Didn't they trade a reliever recently to clear a little money to the Mets? Yes.
Yeah.
They did. Was it Gott?
So Chris Flexen. And what they did was, and the Mets even released Chris Flexen, but Chris Flexen was due money. So I think they paid Trevor Gott to get rid of the Chris Flexen money.
Yes. So they already cleared the money.
Why are they clearing money?
People thought it was so that they could add at the deadline, but you know, now you're like, I don't know. Like, do they add at the deadline? Cause a foot fracture sounds to me like it's an extended stay. That's not a minimum IL thing. So just
yeah,
not
in terms
great.
Of odds, you know, we're talking about a team that's on the lower end, 13% playoff odds. In terms of projected rest of season win percentage, the Mariners are 3, 6, 9, 11, 12. You know, so even though they project somewhat similarly to the Astros and Rangers going forward as sort of like 35 and 30 teams.
Yeah.
The Astros and Rangers have banked those wins.
Right.
So they would actually have to play at a much higher pace to catch them.
Yeah.
And again, in the AL, you just have the AL East problem where you have to catch the Rangers and you're significantly back at 47 and 48. You're back from the 58 and 39 Rangers. You, You need specifically the Rangers and Astros to fall apart. And I don't think you can sort of dreamcast your way ahead of the Rangers, Astros, Blue Jays, Yankees, Red Sox, Orioles, and all that mix. So,
yeah,
they're in a tough spot. And
them and the Angels are, to me, the most confusing teams. Is like, should they go for it or not? Because you can make a case on both sides. You look at everyone else, you know, who's flirting with that 500, and it's like kind of very clear what they're going to do, right? Like Cleveland, probably going to go for it because, well, go for it in their terms because, you know, they're young, and Minnesota only has 50 wins and is winning that division. So, yeah, Cleveland's probably going to go for it. We talked about the AL East. They got no one near 500. And then you look at these other – you look at everything else, and it's like, well, the Mets are five games under. And so no one's really sure exactly what they're going to do.
I think that actually the Mets and Padres are a little confusing the same way.
A little confusing, yeah. But I think based on
you know what they are built to do. Like, exactly. It's not a, like, you know, are they win now guys or they win later? What are they? They're definitely win now guys. So if they do sell, it's only guys who are not under contract for next year, and you know, they might even offer Snell an extension in the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
You know
what I mean? Well, the Cubs actually are a little confusing too, because for a while it looked like they might be good this year, then they kind of hit the rails, right? Then
they have a decent run differential for a 45 and 50 team.
Then I think Ricketts said something recently that was like, oh, we're definitely gonna be sellers where we're at, and or no, buyers where we're at, and then all of a sudden they went like off the rails. So it's like, well, should you be buyers? You're 45 and 50. You know. But
they're a little bit like the Guardians, where that's like a not a great division. I mean, you're 45 and 50, you're looking up at 53 and 43. That's different than the Angels being 49 and 48 and looking at 58 and 39.
Yes. Yes. So. But you're right. It's clear the intentions of the Mets and Padres are to win. They would only sell begrudgingly, right? Neither of these teams wants to be sellers.
And I can't imagine, like, the Mets, they're not going to sell Pete Alonso. I'm sorry. They're not going to sell him.
No.
They're going to try and sign him.
Right. But I don't know what Seattle's doing. Like, if Jerry DePoto is a listener, give me a text, call me back.
Tell me what's going on, man.
Like, I'm just kind of confused by them, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate. Like, you know, some of these teams, like Philly, when they got up to a slow start, you just knew that they're built to win and they're still going to try to win. But I don't know. I don't know about some of these other teams, Seattle mainly. And the Angels, listen, they're either going to trade Ohtani and fold the whole house of cards, or they're not, right? And it seems like at 500, they're probably not. I think they have to be like four or five games under 500 to convince ownership. This is my own speculation at the deadline.
Because the smoke before was that they weren't going to trade him, and that's been the stance. It's almost like a video review where you have to like overturn the call on the field. The call on the field right now is not trading Ohtani. So there actually has to be like good incontrovertible visual evidence that they should trade Ohtani is how I see like the next couple of weeks going for them.
You know, you buried the lead on the Kelnick injury. He broke his foot kicking a water cooler after he struck out, according to Ryan Divish, their beat writer.
Kids, don't be a red ass. Oh, come on.
That's brutal.
Oh, I didn't see that. I just saw the transaction.
Yeah, dude, Ryan Divish tweeted this.
Don't punch the wall with your pitching hand. Don't kick the water cooler. Come on.
Honestly, it's a little impressive that you would kick the water cooler that hard.
I don't know. Yeah. Toes can fracture. I've fractured a toe just like stubbing it in the middle of the night.
Though.
Oh, yeah. That's actually worse.
Oh, he was so upset about this. Oh, God. He's like crying in this video.
Yeah, because you feel so dumb after you do it. You're all upset and you kick something and then you realize, oh, crap. Who's it? There was a pitcher. Was that the Mariners too? Who punched the wall and was out the rest of the year?
Hunter Strickland. Hunter Strickland. That's right. Oh yeah.
Oh, wow, Devin Williams. Devin Williams in 2021.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I mean, listen, these guys care, I think, more than people realize, but. Yeah, I needed to get that in there. I just saw it come across on Twitter, and I was like, whoa, you know, bury the lead, this casual foot break. Like, it was more to that. some frustration, not good at all. I don't know if I've seen a timeline for him.
Yeah, but in terms of vibes, if the Reds' vibes are good, this is not good vibes for the Mariners.
No, definitely, definitely. Not good vibes, but always good vibes chatting baseball with you. We've made it through another show without DVR. I'm surprised they're not like, you guys are not allowed to do this without Derek. He keeps us steady. He keeps those rundowns going. But I think we did a good job.
He's sorting his boxes right now, and he'll be all situated next week.
He is. Godspeed to Derek as he completes his move back home to Wisconsin. The Brewers stuff is about – we didn't even mention the Brewers in this episode, but don't worry. We're going to make up for it when Derek comes back.
That's right. He didn't have anybody to talk Brewers with today.
So don't worry about that. So anyway, it was a great afternoon recapping baseball with you, Eno, as usual. He's at Eno Saris. I'm at Britt_Giroli on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. Get links to all of our stories. Subscribe to The Athletic. Read all of Eno's great stuff. Eno had just like a ridiculously mind-blowing story the other day about the way the park co. I'm not going to give too much away, but you should read it. I caught it like a day late and was like, fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. Also, there's going to be all breakdowns from Ken Rosenthal, all the latest trade deadline stuff, more Ohtani than you can handle. You know, give us a follow. Also, if you like this episode, a subscribe, a review, all that good stuff. We would very much appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Britt Giroli with Eno Saris.
You've always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0, and she's gone.